Welcome to the Apprenticeship Diaries, where raw meets refined.
Let's be real, we're still working on refining.
What it took, what it takes, and the stories that are made.
Join us as we learn from professionals about how their stories began.
That's why I always thought about doing 3D stuff to show to my clients the final product. Because I started, I got a few clients that came to me just because they knew that they could have an idea about the final product. Because when you look at something flat, it's not easy to understand for them. And also for me, it's easy to understand what can I do in the elbow area or everywhere else. Yeah. I was doing freehand drawings, and I look at my old stuff and I think, how could I do something freehand? I mean, I'm working on the skin of someone, but it was okay during those times.
Well, I think it helps you later do it quicker. Like when you do it longhand like that, once you find the tools that expedite it for you, you get to the final product so much faster. Cause you know what an elbow is going to do. You know what the ditch is going to do. You know how it's going to fit and flow and all of that. So the more that you're able to do those things and kind of figure them out, you know, longhand, the better you're going to be when you get in alignment with these tools that help you get to the product sooner. It's really just more about what you're able to show your client, honestly. Because for me, I don't feel like at this point that I need the digital stuff as much for myself. I see it in my head, but like, telling them that, I'm just like, oh, just trust me, it's all here. And they're like, what? No, I can't put no. And so it's a harder sell, not to mention the fact that I do feel there's a quality upon what I can charge. And I'm going to be realistic about it. What I can charge that client if I'm the kind of person that, you know, this other tattoo artist will not show you what you're going to get before you show up there. They're going to make you just trust them. And then that's that. Whereas with me, I have this whole other thing to what I get to offer you that, you know, you get to see fully what you're buying before you buy it. And we can draw this out as long as you want to. You're going to pay, but you can make it as long as you want it to do. And it's not going to piss me off because I'm getting paid. So, like, you know, so I think, and it's for your body, but it's also for me too, because I think that's a big thing about artists. Sometimes we're afraid to ask for what we need. And we kind of, I don't know, I've felt it in my life of just like, you know, I'm not feeding people. I'm not sheltering people. You know, this is purely extra. And, you know, I wouldn't handle it this way. I would go into an artist that I love and be like, dude, you have my arm. I love you. Do whatever you want. I fucking trust the shit out of you, but that's me. And I, you know, I'll pay whatever they ask at that point, but that's not everybody. And some people really like, you know, like you said, the control of their experience, and they want to know fully what they're going to get before they get it. And there's no reason why I can't give that to them. But if I have to feel like I have to give it to them, then I'm going to be mad, because it's a lot of extra time, and it's my time, and it's my expertise. And there's no reason why I shouldn't charge for that. There's no reason why I shouldn't ask. And if they get mad about that, I'm like, well, then, you know, you don't really want this then, you know, like you're going to have to go to somebody where you're just going to have to trust. And I guess you're going to have to get over yourself, but
fake sleeve. It will cost just $9.
And yeah, and try it out.
Get it and try. Yeah. And you can change it whenever you want. Yeah. Of course, it will not.
I just bought
even when there is the stitches, but anyway, you can try it.
Yeah. Hey, try it out. You know, I actually just bought tattoo paper to print on just for, you know, honestly, I did it so that at conventions and stuff, because I don't know why our conventions are designed the way that they are. I don't know how they are in Italy, it's, but in America, it's the same, you know, people are bringing their kids. It's everything.
It's like so the old like, fair.
Oh, it's crazy.
It's exactly the old fair. And,
yeah. And I don't know why
I think
we
about convention, I think that they are still the same old thing, like the old fair when there is the bearded woman and the heavily tattooed man and stuff like mm-hmm. that. Nothing changed. Everything is, you need to have a phenomenon and something, and you have to work with loud music. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you hate it, and a part of the loud music, there is also this kind of, how do you call it? I don't know, the other people that are making some noise around. And yeah, and so, yeah, I think that tattoo convention as they are right now are terrible. Yeah, but you have to go once in a while. And yeah, I think that a convention should be more like,
yeah,
you should not even tattoo at a convention.
Professional.
I
that's
like,
exactly,
I don't know,
you know what?
Dentist convention.
We have been talking about
there
this.
There are people
long
that
time.
Are fixing your mouth.
You don't?
There?
You,
of course not.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
No, and
selling
I think,
stuff,
and I think
product.
it would be really great. You know, I think that honestly, product companies and machine builders and everything are doing themselves a disservice to
no,
keep.
No, I don't think so.
Because they're the sponsors,
they
right, to these conventions. And I don't
I
know why
that, tattoo suppliers are doing a disservice to the
really?
Whole industry since the last century. Because let's talk about the old fair that we were talking about. They were building tattoo machines and they were selling out and they were convincing people that if they were going to learn how to tattoo, they would make a lot of money so they could sell their own tattoo machines. And nothing changed. Like right now, if you go to every tattoo supplier online, there is the starter kit at $90. For fuck's sake, I don't even buy a box of needles for $90 almost.
Well, I know that, but that kind of goes down to what I was saying about free markets. You know, like there's going to be the professional
when you,
that goes to the convention that like you and
there's
me.
Something that is happening also in the arts. Like you go to a bookshop and there is learn how to paint a portrait. Okay, you can do it as a hobby at your house. Of course you can do it. But not on other people's skin.
Right.
You don't go in a bookshop and you will never find a booklet like learn how to fix your mouth by yourself or become a surgeon as a hobby. I mean, when you're working on people's body, you cannot do something like that. And I think in this case, I think that some regulation is like, I mean, if you go to a gallery, not contemporary art because that's too easy, but classical art. If you go to a museum and you watch those paintings, and I don't know, for sure there are museums also in the US, probably not as many as in Europe, but you go there. And you look at those amazing paintings, you can think, wow, I want to become a painter and be able to do something like this. But immediately you understand that you need to be trained, you need to go to a school, you need to work hard before you get there. And the same as you buy a comic book, you watch it and you think, wow, I love this stuff. I want to become a comic artist. And you immediately know that you have to get a training, a school, and whatever before you get there. In the tattoo industry, it should be the same. I think, because you're working with other people.
I don't know if that's true. Because when I was a little kid, Well, no, I but see, the that all came from art.
But
though,
you're working
me,
on someone, like, someone else's body.
I never.
You cannot de-responsibilize yourself from the fact that maybe this guy or this girl. So, okay, just let's try. Who cares? We are friends. I did it, but it doesn't mean that I was. Yeah, I did it, but it doesn't mean that it's right.
Yeah.
Especially in this time and age.
Well, but
it was right for the time, not
it was,
right
well,
now.
Well, it was right for the time.
No. It wasn't right,
right
not even for the time.
But, like,
because that person that I don't see in ages, they have some shit on their body, and I did it. I was a kid. We were kids.
But that's what you
okay?
see about
we
it.
Were,
they're probably
we were kids. I modified
dude,
their body.
They might be telling this to you.
They let
kid.
Me do it, but. If they had a sore tooth, and I told them, oh, I have a, I don't know the name, fuck. Yeah, I can do it.
Fire.
Do you think that they would tell me, okay, let's do it?
I'll tell
of
you what.
Of course not, because the culture, this that kind of culture
it
was inside them. They knew that. I was not supposed to work on their teeth. Tooth. And the same should become with tattoo. Okay.
I don't know about that.
Let me tell you another thing.
Hairdressers.
Okay. Hairdressers. In Italy, to become an hairdresser, you have to go to school. It's 4 years of school. Psychology of the client, how to cut hair and whatever and so on. And then you have to get an apprenticeship in a shop for other, I don't remember if it's 2 or 3 years, okay? Just for hair. And hair grows, not to me, but on other people grows again. And this is just to be an hairdresser. But to be a tattoo artist, you just go, at least in Italy, you take a class of 20 hours, and if you have the money, tomorrow you open a shop. That's why we have so many shitty tattoos around. And this is not the same, I mean, not just in Italy, but all over the world. I remember I was reading Skin Deep last year or 2 years ago.
Underregulated.
And they were amazed by the fact that in Austria they have a course to get to become a tattoo artist that was 100 hours. And I was like, what the fuck? It's nothing. 100 hours is nothing. Right. I needed to go to school for 4 years to learn how to draw. Not even to... So I understand people are allowed to do shitty things that they will regret. But nowadays, in this time and age, with this kind of how the tattoo is spread all around the world, in every country, something like that should be done. And I think that tattoo will become art when people looking at a tattoo will understand that to get there, you need some training, some education, understanding of the client, and something that you cannot... Yeah, you can learn by yourself. I did it, but now I'm 52. It took almost 30 years of my life to understand what I'm doing. And something that I'm telling you, it was not even clear to me until just, let's say, 5 or 7 years ago. So...
I wanted to ask you, like, I agree with you.
Emotional is correct.
I think because you do have your own story and you would do things differently. And I can appreciate that. And I think that that's something that as an older person myself, you know, it's a natural thing if you are a caring person. And that you recognize legacy and you recognize people and you recognize and you care that you would want to to keep certain people from doing things that are ultimately going to hurt them. That's just a natural thing to want to give to the next generation of people. I think that's what your mom was freaking out about when she saw what you were doing.
This kind of work because I don't like people that just tracing pictures. It is doing it great. It's great in what it does, but I don't like that kind. But I think he's doing something great. Right. In his area, he developed a school, 3 years school together with the Academy of Art of his city. So you have 3 years of school when you get educated about tattooing and stuff like that. And then because he's a big name, he has, I think, 7 tattoo shops. And also because of his name, he can invite great artists and so on. And so you, after you get these 3 years, you will get trained in his shops together with him, with other people. I think this is the role.
Well, here's the thing, though. Here's the thing, though.
Should take.
Well, but here's the thing. Here's the thing. In America, it is very overregulated. And I'll give you a little history about hair because we use that as an example. It is sublimely overregulated. And there is very formative schools to teach it and everything like that. It's like $13,000 and it's years long. But for hair. The thing is it's like all things. Education becomes its own thing of selling, too. It becomes something that's about
school system in America is fucked up.
Let me tell you,
because it's too fucking expensive. You have to get a loan to go to school. I think that, I'm sorry to say that, but I think that the school system in the U.S., it's terrible. I mean, if you don't have the money, you don't get an education.
I think that's
what's appearing to me.
Yeah, fucked up.
It's
true. 100% true. 100% true.
It's true and it's not true, because here's the thing is that it goes back to what I feel like education should be. You know, like I feel like education should start with fundamental things at certain gradients of your own capacity to take in information. So like when you're really young, there's no reason to me why we weren't, you know, being a powerhouse country, why I'm not speaking to you in Italian right now, why I don't know Italian right now, why, you know, because at that young age, that's such a great age to start teaching other language and things like that. So I feel like our education system is missing a lot of things that it really could be. I know, but I went to Italy and I met kids that I stayed with, and they had a full scope of language because they were taught it early, and it was a part of their actual education, by yourself
it's easy because everybody speaks English, and if you want to learn English, I started learning English with movies. And it's easy because I think that 80% of the movies are in English. Right. So it's easy with subtitles and so on. But let's say I want to learn German. Probably I would have, I don't know, 10 movies to look at. Yeah. It will be a lot harder. It's easy.
It would be a lot harder. And it's agreed. But I going back to everything, one, being a hairstylist, I don't know if it was ever considered a profession as mostly a ritual, but it's the second oldest profession to prostitution that exists.
The second?
Second oldest profession to prostitution. I feel like it's in the running, because I don't know if it was ever a profession as much as a cultural ritual. Yeah, and I think that, right. Yes. So I don't think it was ever considered that way because it would mean that it was an actual trade of goods and services. Yeah.
Almost really. Mm-hmm. Shaman, there was the shaman is something yeah. sacred.
Big.
I think that we would
need, yes.
it would be better if we
what?
Could take back that kind of sacred thing about tattooing. I don't want to become
I agree.
A priest.
I agree. And and I think that definitely is there.
Oh, absolutely not.
Well, no, I don't think it's necessary. I think what's necessary is recognizing... Well, I think it's like religion because, for example, if you're going to teach religion to a young kid, a young kid can't wrap their head around the value of that, the metaphors, the way of seeing. And it isn't only until you're older do you kind of understand what religion is actually trying to say, because you have to live a certain amount of life in order to actually get
there. I think it's about the story, the history. Because I've been always against religion and stuff like that, but just lately I'm not becoming a religious person, but I'm starting reading history. I got a bit of a passion about history lately, and I now understand what's the meaning and what's the importance of Christianity in the Western world, in Europe, and so on, how it helped to build society in the way they are, and so on and so forth. So, yeah, I understand probably if we would teach to our kids the history, how our world was created, made of, why those regulations were put in place, and stuff like that, would be easy for them to understand and to absorb that kind of notions without this kind of dogma that they push. Because, of course, if I think about, I don't know, 200, 300 or 400 years ago, you had to force to people some regulation with a dogma like a god or something like that. And so probably it was easier for ignorant people to learn those kind of dogma and those regulation because there is a terrible god up there, and if you don't do the right thing, it will come and you will burn in hell or something like that. Maybe one time was necessary. Nowadays, I think it would be better to teach our kids why those kind of regulation. But probably because we are doing this kind of things for so long, probably not even the priest is able to tell you why. And you have to reach that level by yourself, by reading books and say, oh, now I can see why they were doing this kind of things and,
yeah.
And those regulations were in place. And I can see the value of Christianity in the developing of the Western world and so on. But of course, when I was a kid, for me, it was just a stupid regulation and dogma and thinking about an old guy with a white bird up in the air that was looking at you every time. And if you were good, you would go to the heaven. And if you're bad, you would go in hell. Just pretty much like Santa Claus. Santa Claus is the preparation for God. It's training for God. It's the same.
It depends on how you were taught, right? Like, and how that information was delivered to you. And that's what I'm kind of getting at.
You're talking with a guy that was raised in one of the most Catholic nations in the world. We have the Pope here, you know?
I know. And
he doesn't pay taxes.
Yes. And I'm also talking to somebody who
also in the U.S., religions are not paying taxes.
No, they're not. They're not.
Yeah, but I'm not so smart to give birth to a new religion.
It would be great. I feel like... No. It's fine. I feel like you also are kind of vetted within the fact that there's so much art fundamentally, and then that culture. There's so much formative culture that comes out of Italy that for you to have this mindset, I feel like is appropriate, because you know, I come from a country that's only 200 years old, really. And so for me, you know, the idea of, I love the idea of creative destruction. I love the idea of knocking down walls and knocking down regulations and not inhibiting exploration, because for me, it almost sometimes frames it too much.
Here, and then, to knock down a wall, you need at least 10,000 permission before you do that.
Yeah. But
it's right. Because
It isn't, because sometimes I feel like it depends on how it's given to you as a young being, whether or not you're going
this doesn't give permission to destroy something just because it's not delivered to you in the right way. I mean, maybe you want to build a railway or something like that, and you find there is we were excavating and we found an archaeological site, and you have to stop everything. And it's good to do that instead of saying, "Oh, who cares? Just some
and that came to me just in my household. My mom was just like, "If you fuck up this shit, I'm gonna fuck up you." Like, I learned respect for things very early because my parents were like, "Look, dude, we worked for this. This isn't yours. This is ours. And right now, you're ours. You don't even have your own agency. You're a kid. This is what being a kid is. You don't get to just fuck with anything that you want to do." Like, and I think that
it's not even just something personal, is something like, if you think about the Milan Dome, it took, 350 years just to build that. It's not even we did it and you came after us and we did it for you. No, that's just part of the community, of the,
right.
I mean, 350 years. Can you imagine nowadays?
Yeah. I cried when I went to Italy.
Something that took generations to build it.
Yeah.
So before
I understand.
Tear it down, I mean, maybe you have to
agree
think
with
it
you.
Twice.
I agree with all of that. I think that respect is something that definitely you have to give to those things. I cried when I went to Italy and I saw half the buildings because I knew the history and I knew how many souls went into that. I knew that, you know, even within the art that was created, the fact that the artists were threatened sometimes with their entire lives of their families, you know, to produce the art for the church, for the government of that time.
Yeah, it's sad. Impossible to think about someone that was working at those kind of monuments, and they knew that they would never see that finished.
Right,
they were working and.
I want to get back to.
It's so hard to think about that. Even
I do agree
even
with
the
you.
Architect that thought about that. I mean, he wasn't able to see it finished.
Yeah, I do agree with you. I would like one.
It means
I would like to welcome you that in the future
for a greater good or.
Well, I think in the future, I'd love to get together with you because I do have a vision of really wanting to have. At least at a baby level, and maybe it'll become big, but I do have a vision of a professional tattoo convention that if ever there was a bunch of people that wanted to get together to create it, I would be totally into it.
It would be great.
I really want to do that.
I don't know if it will work because of course there, you have to think about advertising and all that stuff, but I'm thinking about people. Are people interested to go to a tattoo convention where nobody is tattooing?
I think so. Honestly, I do.
Well, only professionals are interested.
No, I mean, professionals right now, but honestly, Off the Map, which is how I met Marcus Leonard, he did lectures there and they were really trying for that. And I think that they were getting close to something like that. But I think that what we need to start doing is, you know, recognizing these innovators.
Like the worldwide tattoo convention.
I feel like seminars in different things. Like, for example, You have something that I hunted you down for, that you know how to do, that you could teach, you could do a seminar for, that it's cross-pollinated, really, because, you know, you're talking about digital media where it meets design. There's so many different things that you're kind of grabbing onto there that I think that if somebody was, for example, you know, an animation artist who also was, you know, not really liking working there all the time or on a computer all the time, or they don't like their atmosphere or the people that they work with, and say they do have a lovely thought about being a tattoo artist, but they don't know how to even get started. If that kind of artist could then know that they could go to a kind of tattoo convention and meet somebody like you, who could then show them how to, you know, do this, and then they could go to this, all these different seminars where, you know, they could talk to a tattoo artist about client sculpting and how to sculpt a clientele. They could go to another person about what kind of digital software they do for their online booking and things like that. If we got together these people that were like, somebody from Square that's like, I have this whole platform that's great for tattoo artists because we've completely designed, you know, templates about how to make, you know, websites for you. You can do all your online booking there. You can do all your digital processing through us, one-stop shop. And they could actually do a seminar that was catered to tattooing specific and teach not only professionals how to be better professionals, but they could teach the populace about just the fact that, like, this is something that one showcases us in a better way, because this is stuff that we do. We just don't all know the same things about what we're doing. And I feel like when it comes from the professionals themselves and not like a regulatory institution that's concerned about a shit ton of other things. And they're mostly concerned about money, because I can tell you how it happened in the hair industry. The reason why there's all this regulation is because in the beginning, barbers used to be partial surgeons. All that you were talking about, like pulling teeth and things like that, they used to do that. They used to do bloodlettings. They used to pull teeth. They used to do minor surgeries. So in the dawn of barbering, once it became like that, there became this call to regulate it, because they were working with people and they were also kind of confronting this medical, you know, boundary to where they were like, well, we gotta start regulating this so that we have more responsibility about what we do. But then it segregated and it became the medical community and then the barber community. And then nothing really changed. I can tell you that here, like, I'm learning how to do things in the hair. Well, when I did it, I was learning how to do things in the hair industry that are so antiquated, they're not even a part of my job. Like, yeah, there's a lot of things that I think it's great to create hoops that you ask the most passionate.
Yeah, I think I understand. Over. And I'm not a fan of regulation, but I think terrible that in the tattoo industry, you can open a tattoo shop, and even if you are unable to draw anything decently, I mean, that's terrible. And
but how long will it last? Let's be real. Like, if you're terrible and you're putting on a terrible product and you don't really know how to run it,
how much money you are asking for your service.
Yeah,
because
but
there
even
will be
still,
always someone that asking less. And there will be always someone that asking a lot. And tougher is who's in the middle.
Yes. Ultimately, that always is the case. But
to make my point, there are a lot of people that I know that sometimes show me some tattoos that they got somewhere. And anytime... it happens that they, just because they went to a shop, they thought that, okay, is legitimate, is professional because he has a shop. And it's not like that.
Right.
Because
that's why it would be great for the general public to go to these conventions and see
it would be great for the clients to go to a tattoo shop and know that the professional, there is professionality in what they are doing, and not just going to a kid that had enough money to get a 20 hours class and open a tattoo shop and doing shit.
Right.
So,
right. Well, I mean, for example, the thing that I grew up with and that formulated respect for art for me was that my dad saw that I was really into art. So he was like, well, I'm going to take you and I'm going to show you museums. And he took me to museums and I learned not only what you talked about, how you don't destroy, you know, these things, that they're preserved for you to look at and they're super old and you don't touch, you only look. I mean, I was like an 11-year-old kid that he was walking around and that he was, you know, formulating like, you have to have this respect and I'm showing you what you're going into in some way, what the legacy of what you're doing will ultimately be maybe hundreds of years later when you're not around anymore. And I feel like giving the public multiple layers of institutions that recognize tattooing, like the fact that we are having museum showcases of body art at this point, that there are doctors that have, you know, ask prisoners in certain places to skin their bodies to keep their flesh so that they can be preserved forever. You know, those kind of things, I feel like it's getting there and I think it will more and more. However, I'm very concerned about, I'm concerned about regulation because it has nothing to do with anything that they showcase it being about. They showcase it being about your safety, about the quality of the profession, about all this stuff. When meanwhile, it's all about lining somebody's pockets. And the reality for me is I want to keep, and I think a lot of tattoo artists, I want to keep it within us. I want to keep it as much within us as possible. I'd love to showcase like, in this convention, you know, actual machine builders, how that's an art form all its own. And if you want to get into machine building, not only could they charge more for their specific machine that like they can't mass manufacture
things like that.
Yeah,
I understand, but it's
like
not something that, you know, like, that you can learn in a convention. It takes
years.
No,
but it can advertise it. A convention's only supposed to show you the profession. You know, a convention's just a view of the industry. Like, that's just a networking opportunity in my mind.
Yeah, let's say it could be some sort of association of tattoo artists, but still, who decides who's good or who's not? I mean...
Well, I'd like it to be us. I mean, I'd like it to be people like us who are passionate, who do care, who are in the industry, who would know how to kind of frame that in a way that it would be ultimately about the things that we were making it about the art, about the quality. Because the one thing I can tell you about hair is that no matter how much fucking education there is, you can still get a bad haircut. You can still get a bad haircut.
Yeah, but it will take a lot of time, a lot of people, and a lot of money to do something like that. At the end, a tattoo artist wants to do his own art. And so to give, let's call it some sort of certificate that someone is good enough to do something, it would take people that look at his work and so on and so forth. And so you need people and money to do that. And
well, I think that the older generation
and
has
the state
that
already has it.
Well, for me, you can take it back.
It would be just enough.
You can take it back
to say, okay, you can get this 20 or 30 hours class to get your license and open your tattoo shop, but you have to show that you're able to draw at least. That you would need a diploma from your college, a college about art or something like that, art college. Something.
Well, you're thinking very big. And we were talking about a business idea the other day, and he's like, babe, you're going too far. And I said, I'm sorry, I think very far ahead. I agree with you. It would take a lot, but I don't think that this, I think it's like what he said to me. He's like, we start small. You always start small. You start small and you start formulating these relationships, which is why I really like the idea of this podcast, because then I've been so isolated within just the bubble of creation that like I wanted to meet more artists, and the convention. You know, the conventions don't offer about networking.
Starting small, it makes sense, but I don't know how it works in the US, but here in Italy, and I think all over Europe, if you have an association that gives some sort of certification to a professional or something like that, probably you would need some other authorization by your state to do something mm-hmm. like that. So it seems that it makes the things more
more
bureaucratic than the bureaucratic bureau or something like that already is.
Right. Well, but I'm not talking about. I'm talking about a convention.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm talking about. We are. Oh, well, ultimately, they're always going to move in, especially if they see that these people are making a lot of money, and if they see that what is being sold is very popular. And I think it's already happening. It's already government's already really moving in and trying to take their slice of the pie. But for me, I feel like there's a lot more that creatives, especially older tattoo artists, where let's be honest, our backs start hurting eventually. It gets harder and harder for us to do this very, very physically taxing thing. But that doesn't remove the fact that we have a wealth of things to still sell. We still have so much to give to this future generation that maybe doesn't require us actually tattooing, you know, like that's the passion and everything, but eventually that's going to get harder and harder for us to do. That doesn't mean that we don't have something epically great to create for the next generation of person that I think would be just as gratifying, because then we would still be surrounded by the art. We'd still be a facet of this thing, and we would have created something that we care about so much. And that to me is, I don't know, that's what spawned this whole thing. I elected not to be a parent. So within that, there was a huge calling for me to make up for that in legacy. And in wanting to make sure, because I care. I don't hate kids. I love kids. I chose not to be a parent because I thought I'd do a shitty job. But there's something in me that's still very about wanting to protect these little beings and the next, because I did go to that museum. I did see what happens when, you know, people have this respect and appreciation, and when they have these skills and they're lifted up because of that. And then they're trying to.
I think that we will get there when the kids will start studying tattooing in schools, in elementary school.
If they study anything, if they start fucking reading again, like, you know, like that would be great. You know, like that would be great. I mean, I agree. And that's where I kind of have a conflict with technology, is that I feel like it keeps evolving in such a way that is so commercial and is so about making the next buck, that they're designing technology so that you have to buy this next thing in order to even just operate the thing that you just bought. You know, like it's all this extra shit. And it comes down to, like you said, with the product companies, I feel like they're taking over. And that's where regulation really happens, is because They're the ones that are able to kind of craft the business part of it and take the talent and utilize it to their own means. It happened in the hair industry too. Basically, product companies started framing what they expected to sell, and then they started getting into regulation and they started framing this entire thing about how they could corral this talent and make it work for them. And that is where we're kind of at with tattooing, and it really pisses me off. I mean, even the COVID thing, the fact that product companies got to keep working because they sold medical supplies. Meanwhile, they take out the talent, the people who actually, the practitioners who actually know how to safeguard their clients, who actually know about cross-contamination, was asinine to me. I was like, most of my nurse friends have said to me, dude, you're cleaner than most hospitals. Why would you have to stop working? And I was like, I don't fucking know. Yeah. And same thing with hairstylists. You know, all that licensure, all that fucking, you know, about safeguarding your client, about being.
Well,
you
but
know,
I think that we okay are talking about public. Something that has to do more with the geopolitical games than just about tattooing when we talk about COVID, because it's something that is taking over all over the world. And the script is always the same. So I think there's something bigger. Mm-hmm. And
well, there is. But we are in the middle always, because in order to make great art, you have to stay in the middle. You can't ever get up here or stay down here. To be making great art always, you have to keep yourself humble. You have to keep yourself sharp. You have to keep yourself ingratiated with the public. And you can't get too far removed or else you're not making good stuff anymore. So artists are dangerous, because we are people who know how to challenge the norm, because we keep ourselves there because we're passionate about this thing that is about connectivity, that is about, you know, being around other people, getting other people jazzed, making people excited, teaching them. And that's honestly why the church isolated artists, is because in the beginning, only some people were literate. And they wanted to sell religion. So they knew they couldn't make everybody literate. That would take far more work than just making these isolated pictures that they could show. That was the original comic book, was, you know, stained glass windows and these beautiful, you know, manuscripts with, you know, actual illustrations. And that's how they basically sold religion, is they took artists and they made them, and they threatened their families. And we have throughout history been treated that way. And I think that's why artists always feel so,
well, it's,
you know,
not exactly like that. So, not always.
Well, but I feel like that's why,
I mean,
we feel abashed
A long, you know, history of artists since the Renaissance. The artist was just an artisan. It was a craftsman. The art was thought of like labor, like a work, well, like a
it
job.
Was
it was mechanical, not it was just with Michelangelo that everything changed. It was him and Leonardo da Vinci that changed completely the idea about the artist. Before of that,
but think about the shaman.
It was just something different. So it was, we are talking about 400 years in which the art changed a lot thanks to them.
Well, there's a lot of things, but I feel like when religion became its own sales pitch, that's when it changed. Because before that, like we were talking about, the shamans were
from the movies right now.
Yeah,
the movies right now. Maybe right now it's more the television and more, I don't know, probably Netflix. It's not so different. The paintings in those times were like movies in our times. You go there, there is a lot of symbolism, a lot of stories, a lot of hidden stories in the story that you probably don't even understand. And they are there, and they are selling something. They are selling an idea, a culture, something. And it was the same with the painting.
Well, I do. I agree with that. But I feel like artists have always been the most, like for me, the most spiritually inclined, because we kind of go to a place that connects to the source. Like we dive deeper than most people are willing to dive. You know, I think that's why a lot of celebrities and musicians, they dive early, because they push themselves to these ultimate limits to feel so much more than the normal person is willing to feel.
I have a different idea about why someone is dying earlier than others. But
Well, I mean, there's a lot of drugs and things like that, but like the thing of it is that I think when you're young,
you're stupid. It's part of that. There's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong. I was stupid too. When you're young, you're stupid. You don't know a lot of things.
Being a boy is even worse
because we as boys are even more stupid. Like you said, your mom told you, you don't do that, and you didn't do it because you're worried about your mom or whatever. But we as boys have to challenge because we have to show the world that we are tough, and so I cannot do that. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Because we were stupid.
Well,
I was stupid.
I
did things that I would never do right now. I would think twice, even three times before I do something. When you get a pick, you're rich. Famous, you can get all the women you want, you can get all the drugs you want. When I was, 20 years old, if I could become a rock star, probably I would do the same as many rock stars did, and I would die early because I was stupid. It's part of being young, it's part of growing up.
It depends on how you quantify your life.
When you're young, you think you're immortal. All the kids that are here now, they are here because they survived. There was an Italian artist in a song said, every teenage, let's say, has its own war. Because when you're a teenage, you do things that when you grow up, when you're an adult, you would never do. And so there are many people that are dying by drugs because they are running with a bike, because they are speeding with a car, because they are doing a lot of things.
But then there's people who are professional race car drivers. There are people
and
who
many
are
of
professional
them die.
Skateboarders.
And when they become older, like around 30, 35, they stop. But here's the thing.
Here's the thing.
One last thing about maturity, stupidity, and so on. Enzo Ferrari was used to say that when a race driver, had a kid, he was losing 1 second every lap. He was losing
every
1 second every lap when he got a kid. He was using to say that. And it's part of growing up, become more mature, understand the danger of life.
Honey, that's why I chose not to have kids. That's why I chose not to have kids, because what you're talking about is two different things. I'm talking about making good art, and I'm talking about being connected to a spiritual thing, which I think children and younger people are far more connected to that than older people. The thing of it is that I always hate when people say, oh, they died so young, they had so much more to give. Fuck you. They gave something that has lived on so far beyond their own life. That how dare you tell them that they had more to give? They gave exactly what they were supposed to give. That's framing a life and saying you should have been more, you should have done more. One can argue that they gave everything they can, and they probably accomplished more than I will in 100 years. So for me, it's all about how quickly you burn that candle and how much you give. Yes, socially they're stupid. Socially they're dumb. Socially they don't understand their own physical bodies. They don't understand. And for me though, the beauty though that happens when you're younger, the reason why I feel like no matter how much regulation, no matter how many rules are out there, a young person is so connected with that source, that initial passion, they do feel immortal, because I feel like they really understand their soul, because they just were born. They're closer to that birth, that newness. And we are immortal. As far as I'm concerned, we have an immortal soul that goes on. And this body is just a physical thing that if we let it break us down, and if we let it become our reality too much, then it will panic us. It will panic us about what to give the next future generation. I mean, how do you become this daredevil person? How do you become the guy that was a part of that documentary called Free Climb, that climbed the whole mountainside without anything on him whatsoever? That's fucking crazy. He could have died any moment. And he had all these people saying, why aren't you thinking about me? Why aren't you thinking about the potential of your life? He's like, dude, if I thought about that 1 second up there, I might as well not even do it. Because the reality is that it takes immense amount of crazy to do what we do. It takes that pushing out all the noise. When you're in your space, when you're tattooing and when you're in your private studio, you have to forget about politics. You have to forget about the noise. You have to forget about violence. You have to forget about everything that's going outside around you and just wall into that thing and make and create. And it takes connecting to something that is very, very much so.
Yeah, but I can't even describe it. I call it making art and climbing a mountain without anything. Yeah, I think it's completely different. You don't risk your life doing art.
I don't think so. I'm putting my life on the line. I mean,
you're not risking to die while you're painting.
It depends on what I make art about. It depends on what I make art about.
I don't think right now you would risk your life. Maybe you could risk to be banned from some social media or something like that. But I don't think anybody will come to you and burn you on a stick just because you did something.
I mean, right now. But if I created art in a different time, like Caravaggio. Caravaggio was,
it was
very
violent.
I mean, he got hooked up. Yeah. He was violent, he did a lot of things, challenging the system.
Probably he would challenge the system also if he didn't make art. It's just that he was so driven by his art that he was an artist, but he was challenging authority anyway. So
he's a rebel.
Well, and that's what I'm talking about, is that I think that good art does that. I think that's the art that lasts forever.
Yeah, but it's hard to do that with a tattoo, since the tattoo has a lifespan of, 50, 70, maybe if you're lucky, 70 years.
Yeah, but it's more about the movement, I feel, when it comes to tattooing. I feel like it's more about...
So do you want to challenge the authority with tattooing?
I do. I think that it's about changing how people see each other. And I think it's about recognizing, you know, like I have clients that say to me, like, oh, you know, I get grabbed all the time. I get, you know, touched all the time. And I don't even understand why people would do that. Or, you know, people accost me when I'm when I'm walking down the grocery store and things like that. Like,
don't
they'll
touch me.
And even if they're,
if you want to see, just ask.
Well, yeah. Right. And I think that that's something that the reason why that is such a thing is because of all the things that you're talking about, that people don't know history. People don't know how to see each other. People don't know how to respect each other. And, you know, when I grew up in the hair industry, it's all about teaching people through beauty how to personal brand and how to have ownership of themselves. And so many people would come to me, as you said, with pictures wanting to be somebody else. And I'm like, well, you don't have hair like that. So let's work with what you have, and I'm going to make you love what you have. And you're not going to like this hairstyle that I could make you look like this person, but then you're not going to be able to do it because I'm the artist and I can do that to you, but you're going to wake up every morning not knowing what the fuck to do. And it's going
to
be an awful haircut, and you're not going
to
like it.
Do a lot with consumerism.
Consultations.
Yeah.
Oh,
it
consumerism,
has a lot to do with that. It's a 100-year history about that. And people just see things and they want what they see, even if they are not.
Right. But that's because they don't understand celebrity and the fact that they're a part of that celebrity. The reality is that you don't get famous unless somebody thinks you're awesome. So in essence, the person that thinks you're awesome is equally accountable for the fact that you're famous. You know, like if you have all these fans, you are that person because these people saw you that way. And so I think there's this disconnect with the public somehow, if they don't understand that, like, how much gratitude, for example, that I feel for them because they feel honored to get tattooed by me. And I'm like, dude, you're giving me a piece of your skin forever. I'm honored because you're a part of my journey. You're a part of my art. I have a really good idea what I'm going to deliver on you, but still, there's going to be
yours.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes the client wants something from you because it's you, because he saw something that he likes and thinks you're great, and I want you to do this the way I want it. And if you discuss and say it's not gonna work and whatever, and sometimes you have to do something that you don't like. So,
that's about paying the bills. And I think that that's different though, because I feel like you can ultimately get to a point, the more that you teach people about their own ability to personal brand and you give them that's what you're selling them, then they can really buy in. And when you become like a person that is honestly, that is always going to make that a part of what you do, then you get to keep doing that. And then you become this person that like a shaman can literally sit down with somebody and then create something for them that is so pivotal to their everyday after that. Like, you've marked them with the perfect thing that makes them feel even better about who they were than when they walked through the door. And sometimes you can't, but that is when I usually say no. When I usually say no is when at the consultation level, I usually don't even get involved with people. It's very rare that I make that mistake now.
There was a time about, in between 2015 and 2017 that I had a waiting list, about 1 year waiting list. And I was, I told so many no, too many, because you get used to, and so there was a lot of people that they were not coming to me because I was the guy that, Jerry doesn't do that, doesn't want to do that. Oh, don't go to Jerry because he doesn't do that. And so I had a loss of clients. So I probably said too many no's. And it comes to a point in which I was also the only tattoo artist in an area of about 20 miles. And now there is about, a tattoo shop every, 300, 400 meters, something like that. So.
Right. Well, see, here's the difference.
So now
though,
I have to say yes to something that I would usually say no. Because I have to eat.
I know you have to eat, but you said no without a follow-up. And I was always taught, because I learned in the hair industry, like I said, I was always taught, I was raised on the front end first, and we were taught to never say no. You never say no, you always follow up with no, but we could do this for you. So what I always do is I tend to say no, and then If I contact the person and I say no, I usually contact them back and say, however, my friend over here probably is what you want. And what I do is I feed my friends.
Like that.
And so then
I didn't do the perfect way, but anyway.
Yeah, but that's the thing is that I feel like if we gave a culture of that within the tattoo community where we stopped competing with each other so much. And being angry about, I guess they're not angry that people are coming to us to be this person or that person. And we actually like stood behind what we did and just said, no, I don't do that. But this person here does. That person there, once they get word of the fact that you sent them business and perfect business, then they'll give that back. Yeah. And I think that if we actually started loving each other that way and seeing each other that way and seeing our art that way and what we could give to people, I think that that would help everyone. It would help the general public actually even know where to go, because they only know things based on what they see and what they can, you know, grab from. And I feel like what they're being advertised right now is all this Ink Master stuff. Like, you got to do everything. You got to, you know,
it's funny to watch because, I watch it because it's funny to watch and also to get a little bit hungry. But I think it's one of the worst things that could happen to the tattoo industry. I mean, okay, raised a little bit of clientele, people want to get tattoos, but really from the ethical point of view, that show is terrible. It's awful. It's awful. And so I remember there was one of those TV shows when there was clients that wanted something terrible. And there was Oliver saying something like, if they were coming to our shop, they get a no, 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 no. But here, you're an Ink Master, you have to do it. What the fuck? Just about the ethical, the responsibility for the people that you're tattooing, or even that game that I choose the worst tattoo artist for that particular subject and I send it to him. What the fuck? And people keep going there to get free tattoos. What the fuck? And the other show, even awful, the one where like the client that the clients were disappointed about the tattoos, and so they were coming back to get another tattoo, worse. But they what the yeah. oh, really that's terrible. That's I don't know. It creates.
Well, I think it's terrible because
cognitive
like I said,
dissonance or discrepancy, something like that. I think that's what's creating that shift.
Well, we didn't create it. We're that's what I'm talking about. Is that we were the pawns in somebody else's game, and that's what I don't want. I don't want us to feel like we can't formulate something together, you know, that we can't come together and make it what we want it to be. But it does take people collaborating and it does take time away from actual tattooing, which I'm passionate about only because I feel like communication is something that we don't have as a society. And I've kind of had to become good at it. In my whole life, you know, like that's what helped me actually stop being afraid of my mom, was learning communication and learning how to speak and ask. And you know, I've heard so many people say like, wow, you know, you put that in a way that I never knew how to have the words for it. And so for me, like being able to teach and being able to actually know how to verbalize certain things has become its own art form for me, to which I'm kind of understanding that like there are better tattoo artists than me. I have my crowd. I have people that really love me, but I kind of just love this industry and I love what it can become. And I love the players because it is still very raw. And I'd like to be a kind of agent of something. That's why I started this podcast. I want to help this community of people stay within the artists and give the artists the power. I don't want them to lose that power, because you see it in Hollywood right now. Like, you know, they were stars and they were framed and all this stuff, and they had so much agency, and now they're being ferreted out for all this abuse that happened, and they were politically wrapped up and they were being paid off by a lot of politicians and a lot of government stuff. And a lot of people kept them safe and kept them, you know, and even to the point of where they should have been called out for bullshit that they were doing, but they weren't, because they were movie stars and things like that. And I don't want that to happen to this industry. I want the art to stay good.
I'm not sure that will happen, because it's a different kind of art. It's really personal, and it's the the most important thing that could happen to a tattoo is to become viral. But the deepest meaning that can give to people is so small compared to a movie or even a CD, a music CD or something like that. So I don't think that could happen to tattoo artists.
I do have to let you go though. So, cause I have my consultation at 11 here and we're 7 minutes prior.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I want to talk to you more. This is awesome. We could do a part two.
Part three, cause this has already been pretty long.
It's been wonderful. I really thank you so much. Knowledge that you have, and how can everybody find you on Instagram? Can you do a brief shout out of all the ways? First of all, your Instagram handles and things like that, and how you would like to be contacted?
I prefer to be contacted by email on my website. That is just my name, Jerry Magni.
Okay.
And people can go to my Instagram. That is Jerry_Magni or Magni, as American people used to pronounce.
Wonderful. Yeah, I know me. started at the top.
Or on my Facebook. But if you put my name, Jerry Magni, on Google, I think you will find my website, jerrymagni.com. You get to my website, jerry_Magni is my Instagram. jerrymagni.tattooartist is my Facebook.
So. Right. And then on your website is probably, you have a contact form and that probably will send it directly to you. So that's probably how you'd like the traffic to come to you.
Yeah, I prefer that because nowadays with the social media is a second job already, just to post every day. I don't do it every day, but anyway, it's a second job to do that. And sometimes you get an email from Instagram, another from Facebook, another from LinkedIn, and another. And so you have to jump around looking.
It's too confusing. Yeah, I agree.
And so I prefer just the form on my website. It's a lot easier. Also because in your email client, you can set up your filters and you can send the email where you want and keep it organized and so on. So I prefer that.
Right. Sounds great. And thank you so much. This has been wonderful.
Yeah. Thank you for coming
on. We'll let you go and have the rest of your day. This has been wonderful. I hope I get to meet you in person and actually shake your hand.
I hope so. Whenever you come to Italy or whenever I come back to you to the US, I was there 10 years ago, maybe.
Just know that you have a room to stay in if you ever need it. We have 2 spare bedrooms. If you need a place to stay,
great.
We're here for you.
Where are you? I don't even know where are you.
I'm in Maryland. So
Maryland.
Maryland. Yep. So right near Baltimore, Washington, all that kind of jazz. So
we're BWI.
We're right like there. So BWI is right there.
Hopefully,
so you probably
when might. All this craziness about the COVID will end. End soon.
Yeah.
All of us.
You're welcome to stay with us. And we try to be really hospitable.
Great.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you.
If you want to do a part two, I'm available whenever you want. Just let me know.
Awesome.
Okay. Also, because I remember you sent me the questions, but it ended up just being a conversation without any questions.
That's exactly how we.
So it's great.
It was perfect. Better. Yeah. I mean, it was better than the questions.
it was great. It was great
all
talking
right,
to you.
Definitely. Have a great rest of your day.
I leave you with your client then.
Ciao.
Have a nice day.
Thanks for listening. You can find The Apprenticeship Diaries on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our IG is the_apprenticeship_diaries. If you would like to offer constructive criticism or an interview, drop us an email at theapprenticeshipdiaries@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from our listeners.